the worry usually stops. Secondly, when we're inside our worries, it seems like we're completely responsible or completely irresponsible. Think about it. One type of worry makes you completely responsible. It tends to start with phrases like, "If only I had done that," or "I should have known," or "Only I can stop this." Everything seems to hinge on what you did or didn't do, or will or won't do. Behind this sort of worry lurks the idea that you had, or do have, complete control, that everything hinges on your actions, or that you will have to take the blame. And that's not true. You never have complete control. The other kind of worry makes you feel helpless. You feel at the mercy of forces beyond your control. This type of worry generates scenes that you can't control, but somehow you have to cope with. Neither type of worry is realistic. No one has total control in a situation, but you do have some influence. Thirdly, worry doesn't take you towards a goal. We don't usually worry about what we want to happen. We worry about what we don't want to happen. Worry usually involves thinking in unwelcome detail about all the things that we do not want to happen or that could go wrong. The things that we worry about could be serious if they happened, but they haven't, and usually they don't. This is the opposite of pleasant daydreaming, when we think about all the things that we want or how things can turn out well. Now, funnily enough, daydreaming is frowned on as something frivolous, but worry is often counted as evidence of serious concern. That's very odd. Worry isn't serious. It's a waste of time. Daydreaming is much more pleasant. Often it's constructive too, and it can create some interesting possibilities. Lastly, worry never checks in with the external world. It all stays in your mind. It's like being trapped in a maze where the way out just leads you back in. The chains of thought, and what an apt metaphor that is for worry, never complete, because nothing has happened yet. It's all imaginary, so it can't be resolved. We all have favourite things to worry about, and also favourite times of day when we do. Worry is a sequence that we run in our minds, and when we practice, it gets fast and efficient. The sequence usually starts with an internal voice that says something like, "Suppose this has happened or will happen." This is something unpleasant, of course. The voice triggers mental pictures of some unpleasant possibilities. The pictures are often colourful, close and moving. They're often associated, you're inside them, so they have a strong emotional impact. Not surprisingly, they generate some unpleasant feelings, and then the process starts again. To break out of the worry loop, you need to realise that it is a loop and goes around and around without leading anywhere. Once you realise that, you can get outside the loop and look at it from the outside. Break the loop, first by moving your body out of your worry posture. Come back into the present from that uncertain future. The worries aren't realistic. They usually depend on a series of unlikely events. So, what useful function is worry trying to accomplish? It's probably the equivalent of a mental insurance policy, trying to plan and prepare for bad events, so if they do happen, you're covered. The trouble is, they're trying to accomplish this by acting like an unscrupulous insurance salesperson, painting nightmare scenarios and frightening you into paying more than you want to. Planning is important, but worry is not the best way to do it. So, the next step is to change from worry into something constructive that fulfills this useful planning purpose. Here's how to do it. First, change the initial question from "What if this were to happen?" to "What will I do if this happens?" Also, ask yourself, is this so likely to happen or so important that I need to plan for it? If it isn't, then just leave it. If it is, then start to make a plan. Run through several possible scenes of what you might do, and then pick the one you feel is the best. Then associate into that scene and imagine yourself in it, dealing with the situation. If that feels okay, then you have your plan. Once you have your plan, you can move on to think of something else. If there really is nothing satisfactory you can do, and no plan seems to be adequate, then accept that for the moment. You probably need more information, so start to plan how you can get that. If there's really nothing you can do, then there's no point in thinking any more about it. Insomnia is often a side effect of worry, especially if your favourite time to worry is when you're lying down in bed ready to go to sleep. It's hard to go to sleep when there are a lot of bright, colourful, moving pictures in your mind. In fact, that's a very good way to stay awake. To sleep, you need to concentrate more on your physical feelings and not the mental images. There's a strategy for falling asleep quickly and easily on the second half of this tape. It's a funny thing that the more you try to go to sleep, the less you can. The trying gets in the way of the natural process. It's like the old catch, "Be spontaneous! Now!" Being spontaneous is one thing that you can't do to order, and falling asleep is another thing you can't do by making an effort. We believe that well-being and health are natural, and often our efforts actually get in the way of achieving them.
Research in psychoneuroimmunology strongly suggests that habitual emotions affect our health. Our well-being is intimately connected with our emotions. Well-being is that feeling that comes from good health. It's another way of looking at our emotional state. When we feel tired, angry, upset or anxious, we don't experience well-being. We do pass through many different emotions every day. But which emotions do you spend the most time in? Most emotional states have triggers, and often they're obvious. Weather seems to trigger many of our moods. We feel good when the sun shines and depressed when it rains. There are some direct triggers: an argument, a smile, a kind word, or an angry shout. We respond emotionally in the moment. But sometimes the triggers are indirect. In other words, something happens that reminds you of something else. And it's these triggers that you respond to, often without realizing exactly what you're doing. For example, a particular tone of voice can make us feel angry or annoyed. Perhaps it's like the primary school teacher you hated, or like the particular way your parents scolded you. Also, music has great power to move us, especially if we associate it with an emotional time of our life. Sometimes it's the music itself. Other times, it's what the music reminds us of that triggers our mood. Have you ever suddenly been transported to another time in your life by a particular smell? It could be a perfume, old furniture, the smell of the sea or tar in the road. Smells seem able to bypass our conscious mind and take us back directly to earlier times. Or have you ever visited a school and felt like a little child instead of an adult? Instant age regression. Or looked at a painting and remembered when it was painted and what was happening in your life then. These triggers are powerful. When they trigger pleasant emotions, they're great. But when they trigger unhealthy emotions, they're a problem. They can even set off real allergic reactions. People who suffer from hay fever may start sneezing when they see flowers in the room, even if the flowers are plastic. They don't know the flowers are plastic. The sight of the flowers can't bring on the allergy directly, but the sight brings all the other physical sensations with it. We heard of one very interesting study where a group of 20 asthmatic children were taken into hospital. These children had tested allergic to house dust, and they suffered asthma attacks when they inhaled air that contained a certain concentration of house dust. The researchers took dust from the homes of the children and sprayed it into the air of the hospital rooms where the children were staying. 19 of the 20 children had no reaction. This is interesting because it suggests that our expectations play a large part in creating illness. But we know this anyway from the so-called placebo effect. Placebo is an inert substance that has an effect by virtue of the expectations that it creates. Placebos show the power of beliefs in creating our health. These indirect triggers work by the power of association. We associate them with something else that would be a direct and powerful trigger on our emotions. You can find yourself in the middle of an emotion for what seems like no good reason. This is fine if it's a pleasant emotion, but what if it isn't? You may be able to identify patterns in your unresourceful states, such as depression or anxiety. Anger can be a very useful emotion. It gives us great energy, but it's not useful if it persists as a kind of background annoyance, or you spend a lot of time being angry. Sadness is not necessarily an unresourceful state either. It can be an appropriate response to misfortune, but it shouldn't be an habitual mood. Next time you find yourself in a negative state, and you can't find a good reason, look for a hidden trigger. When you identify some of these triggers, they'll lose their power over you. Once you recognize these triggers, you will have a short moment of choice to think, do I really need to feel like this? In that moment of choice, you can affect your health. What if you're in a negative state? How do you change it? There are two ways to change your state that don't involve food or drugs. One is to change your physiology. One of the best ways is to change your breathing pattern. All states have a characteristic breathing pattern. When you're anxious, you breathe faster. This changes the chemical composition of the blood in a way that increases your feeling of anxiety. If you want to feel calmer, slow your breathing rate down and take twice as long to exhale as to inhale. Laughter is a great way to change your state. It's also good for you. There's evidence that laughing enhances the activity of your immune system and that it decreases the levels of stress hormones in the blood. Laughing feels good and it does you good. Physical exercise is another good way to change state, and so is going for a walk. Even shifting your position will change your state to some extent, because our thoughts influence our body posture and vice versa. Also, acting as if you feel resourceful will generate resourceful feelings. Even if you feel down, you can get out of this state by standing up, looking up instead of down, and smiling. You're not trying to fool yourself or pretend you feel good. You know that you don't at that moment. But acting as if you do will change your state. What's the second way to change state? Change your thinking. The mind-body connection at work again. You can change your thinking in many ways. For instance, you can focus on what's really going on for you and not try to avoid it. Or you could change your thinking by doing daydreaming. For example, think back to a really positive experience. See it again and hear it again as if you're in it. When you associate into a memory, you bring the resourceful feeling back into the present. Whatever glimpse or whisper of pleasure and well-being you had then, you can bring some of it back into the present when you really need it. It's not lost forever. Surround yourself with triggers for positive states. Have pictures, music, and activities that have the power to make you feel good.
The main secret to increasing your health and well-being is to pay attention to your experience. Enjoy the pleasure you have from life. When you feel ill or off colour, then pay attention to that signal. Illness may be one way the body is giving you a signal that it needs to come back into balance. It's not necessarily unhealthy to be ill. An illness can be an opportunity to achieve even more well-being and better health once you're healed. Going back to the lifestyle that you had before an illness is one way of making sure you'll get ill in the same way again. Our mind and body go together to make a wonderfully complex system. Our bodies heal themselves naturally, although sometimes that healing process is uncomfortable. For example, high temperature, coughs and inflammation are part of the body's attempt to heal itself, although they are also the symptoms of the illness. The body has a natural balance and is always striving to maintain it. Anything in excess can be unhealthy. We need water to live, but if you drink too much water, it can kill you. Your body keeps its temperature within a very small range. Too far outside that range, either too high or too low, is fatal. We need to eat some fat to live, but eating too much can lead to heart disease and obesity. Health is one area where too much can be as bad as too little. It's the balance that matters. I remember when I was 8 years old, I used to come home from school across a grassy area, and running along one side of that green was a small railing, a metal tube about an inch across that was raised about 6 inches off the ground by metal supports every few yards. The railing marked the edge of the grass, and on the other side was the pavement. My friends and I used to try to walk along the railing from start to finish without falling off. We used to pretend it was several feet off the ground. The railing ran along the edge of the green for about 100 yards in all. None of us managed to walk the whole length without wobbling and falling off at least once. In the end, we decided that there would be a prize for the person who could get the furthest without falling off. I remember I tried all sorts of strategies to win. I tried walking as fast as possible, so at least when I did fall off, I'd have got quite a long way. But that didn't work very well. I was always unbalanced and had to keep moving fast, otherwise I would fall off anyway. But going fast made me more unbalanced and more likely to fall. However, this strategy did work better than walking really slowly. That made it much harder to stay balanced. I also remember trying to walk while repeating to myself, "I'm not going to fall, I'm not going to fall." I was annoyed at the time, but this made me fall off even sooner, and I didn't know why. I tried looking at my feet, but that didn't get me very far either. The best strategy, the one that got me furthest, was to look to the far end where I wanted to go, and head for that at a comfortable pace. It didn't stop me wobbling, but I always went a long way. Staying healthy is a lot like keeping your balance. You may wobble, but there are always people there to help you. And sometimes illness helps us to find a better balance. We like the saying attributed to the philosopher George Santayana, "There's no cure for birth or death, but to enjoy the interval." This is the end of side one. On side two, there are some exercises to help you put these ideas into practice. We hope they will help you enjoy your life more fully.